Meg, Joe, Beth, and Amy. They're going to the Oscars, thanks to Greta Gerwig's film adaptation of Little Women. Joe and Amy have even been nominated. To help us celebrate, we've got a special guest on this episode of the Think Christian Podcast. I'm Josh Larson. This is the TC Podcast, where there's no such thing as secular, even in popular culture. Before we get started, I wanted to pass along an email address that I hope you'll remember. tcpodcast@thinkchristian.net. We've been trying to figure out a good way to connect with you, the listener. We know you're out there. Our downloads have been consistently growing, so we want to hear from you. If you have a comment to share about one of our recent topics, maybe Star Wars, which we discussed last episode, or maybe today's subject, Little Women, you can send those to tcpodcast@thinkchristian.net. We'd eventually like to start sharing some of those here on the show. Now, speaking of Little Women, let's get to that and our guest, Karen Swallow Pryor. Karen's been writing for us on and off since 2012, and I always feel fortunate to get a bit of her time because she's one of those teachers, speakers, authors, scholars who seems to be doing 10 impressive things at once. Karen's latest book is on reading well. As you can guess, literature is very close to her heart. She's currently professor of English at Liberty University. So I knew she'd be perfect to discuss the new Little Women adaptation, which is up for 6 Oscars, including Best Picture. I also knew she probably couldn't resist such an invitation, and sure enough, she said yes. I'm thrilled to have Karen Swallow Pryor here to talk. What else? Books and movies and faith and all the stuff that she's very, very smart about. Welcome, Karen, to the Think Christian Podcast.
It's great to be speaking with you. After writing for you for so many years, it's fun to do this podcast and have a conversation.
Yeah, for sure. We've been able to meet from time to time in person, but not often enough. And so, yeah, it's good to talk. And I did mention that at the top of the show that you've been writing for TC on and off. Can you guess about how many years or when you first started writing for us? What would you say?
Wow, right out with a hard question. I want to say it's been maybe 8 years or more.
You are on the nose. Yeah, 2012 is when you started writing for us. Now, Here's a harder question. I don't know if you can remember what you wrote about. I don't know if this is the first thing you ever wrote, but it was a post about the ABC sitcom GBC. Do you remember that and what GBC stands for?
Oh, it had the Howerton woman in it. No, Kristen Chenoweth?
I think she was in it. Yeah, now you're testing my memory. It stood for Good Christian Bitches was the real name of the show. I don't think
and
you were a big fan.
And it lasted not even a season or something. Oh, it was so bad.
So thankfully, after that assignment, you stuck around and wrote other things for us as well. And yeah, we hope we can keep that going in 2020. For now, I'm happy to have you on the podcast. So let's talk Little Women here. Louisa May Alcott's book, 2 books originally, and eventually combined into 1 volume. This was one of the early chapter books that I remember from my childhood. And honestly, I'm not sure how I came to read it as a young boy. Somehow it made its way into my hands in between, oh, Lord of the Rings and the Hardy Boys books that I was devouring, but I was a better kid for it. What's your history with the novel, Karen? Did you read it as a kid or come to it later? And what do you think is special about Alcott's original text?
Well, kudos to you for reading it as a young boy. That is great. It really is a book that I think should appeal to boys and girls and men and women alike. I read it as a child and never returned to it until recently, rereading it in light of this new film version coming out. You know, of course, you read it as a young person, and then there are the film versions that you see and fall in love with, and then it just becomes part of your blood and soul. And then to go back and reread the book as an adult after all these years was quite inexperienced, and then to see this wonderful film adaptation, it's been wonderful.
What felt different from your memory, or what did you appreciate maybe differently as an adult? Anything like that come to mind?
Yeah, you know, it was more pedantic than I would have remembered because, you know, as a younger person, you know, I didn't recognize that quality of it. Of course, I later came to understand that, you know, Alcott wasn't her favorite work. She didn't think it would be what it was. And also all of the references to Pilgrim's Progress and the sort of at least surface level Christianity that's in the novel, that wasn't something that I really was attuned to as a young person either.
Interesting.
And so, yeah, that was interesting.
Well, as you mentioned, there are multiple movie adaptations. I'm also a big fan of the Gillian Armstrong 1994 version with Winona Ryder as Jo. But none of those have received quite as much praise as Greta Gerwig's new film. It made a number of top 10 lists, critics' top 10 lists at the end of the year. It does have 6 Oscar nominations, including Best Picture. So yeah, I'm curious just to hear what you made of the movie itself, Karen.
Well, I try to keep my expectations low for this sort of thing. And I mean, my expectations were exceeded, even though I try not to read a lot of reviews or much buzz about anything that I know I'm going to be either watching for myself or writing a review. But I'd seen enough to know that it was getting positive buzz. And so I thought, okay, well, maybe my hopes can be a little bit higher. And it really is a fantastic film. As I said in my review for the Gospel Coalition, I definitely think it's a film that people who know the story will respond to differently than those who are just coming to it for the first time. And it was a film for those who know and love the story, and just a wonderful rereading, reinterpretation, yet faithful too, which is a tough balance to master.
Yeah, I wanted to bring up that Gospel Coalition essay that you wrote, and we will link to it as well in the show notes for this episode. But I love this idea of rereading that you dug into and how the movie rereads the original novel. So you focused especially on the way the movie has, it introduces a nonlinear structure. So different from the novel's chronological structure, the movie jumps back and forth in time. And you see this as a positive, a way of being true, as you said, to the source, while also being creative in its own right. And I'd absolutely agree. Again, as someone who is familiar with the book, I loved this kind of reshuffling that Greta Gerwig did. And I wanted to move that idea a little bit of rereading that you brought up. I wanted to ask you about it as it might apply to our experience with Scripture. So if you think about it, Christians, particularly those who are maybe born into the faith and are introduced to the Bible as young kids, Christians like that have encountered the Bible many times in many different ways. So you have those children's Bible storybooks, but then you have something like church liturgy, which is visiting God's story in a different way. You have our own devotional time that is framing that narrative differently. All of these are experiences of rereading in a sense, wouldn't you say?
Oh, they are. And of course, all good literature is characterized by being infinitely rereadable, and the Bible is the best example of that. I mean, it's literature, but it's more than that. And we do reread the Bible in all of these ways. It's not just rereading isolated passages or stories. We tend to do that with the most popular and interesting ones, but even rereading any passage in light of our understanding of the entire text. That, to me, is crucial to biblical understanding, and one I think is lacking today, and I see it crop up in a lot of ways because people no longer seem to understand the difference between descriptive passages and prescriptive ones,
right,
or passages that the New Testament fulfills, and, you know, which laws are no longer part of the new covenant, which ones are. I mean, we're just so used to reading things kind of in sound bites and decontextualized that it's harder and harder, I think, to read parts of the Bible within the context of its narrative whole.
Yeah, I think you're right. That cherry picking is something you see more and more. Social media probably plays a role in that because it's much easier to just tweet out a short verse than it is to put it in its entire context. And so that's one thing I also did want to ask you is how we can become good rereaders of Scripture, and to take this literary approach makes sense. I mean, much of your work is about being good readers of literature. Your latest book on reading well deals with that. So that's definitely one way I think we can apply literary practice to the Bible, is taking God's entire story in context. Any other tips you'd have along those lines? If you just think of recognizing and honoring the Bible as God's message to us, but also approaching it as we might a great piece of literature that needs some of these disciplines brought to bear on it as well. Any other tips along those lines?
I think probably the most important tip about reading the Bible well, or reading any great literary work well, that applies to us particularly today and seems to be especially challenging, even for myself, is to not feel the pressure to read fast. I think that's what happens in literary works like poetry or great novels. We're so accustomed to skimming the news feed or skimming the newspaper or skimming a blog that we try to read literature this way and we lose so much. And the same, of course, is true with the Bible. And for, you know, the past few decades, it's been kind of popular to read the Bible in a year, which I think is a great idea. But I'm starting to hear people talk more about, instead of trying to read the Bible so quickly and race through, spending time dwelling on one book or one chapter or verses and really dwelling in those passages for a while and meditating on them and reflecting. So in other words, just really to slow down and immerse oneself in the words, whether we're talking about the Bible or literature, the language is so rich and so rewarding, but we don't get those rewards by skimming through.
Well, I find that affirming because I'm notoriously a slow reader, especially when it comes to literature. I think fiction in particular, part of it is just, you know, wanting to savor the language, as you said. And we can certainly apply that to the Bible. It's funny, I reread Little Women this summer with my younger daughter. We were comparing where we were in the book, and she would always be saying, "You're still there. You haven't made it to this part," because that's just my natural tendency when reading fiction. So it's good to hear you say that's a good thing.
How did she like Little Women?
She really liked it. Yeah, she really liked it, which was a relief to me because the feminism, which I knew would appeal to her, is absolutely there. It's kind of why it was such a revolutionary book for its time. But it is so, this is one of the things that I had forgotten. It is so steeped in domesticity and sort of these things that I thought, I wonder if she's going to push back on that a little bit, you know, because these days, younger women and girls, I think some younger women and girls are maybe skeptical of being put in that box. And so I was relieved to see that she responded to that as well, because I think that's one of the wonderful things about Alcott's book is it recognizes the good, wonderful things about a domestic life, while also insisting that women need not limit themselves to that if it's not where they feel they want to be. So, you know, that's an amazing thing the book pulls off. And I was glad to see that it resonated with her. And then she loved the movie too. So that was fun. Let's get back to the movie. I want to ask a question of you from one of our listeners. And it's another Think Christian writer, actually, Kate Myrick. But on our Twitter feed, the Think Christian Twitter feed, we wanted to know what people wanted us to ask you, Karen. So Kate offered this. The wonderful meta-ending of the film left me wondering if some fans of Little Women would end up not liking the film. But I've only heard high praise, even from the most ardent fans of the original book and 1994 movie. Why do you think people loved this ending? And maybe we could dance a little bit around spoilers. I mean, I know it's a book people are familiar with, but if some listeners haven't seen the film yet, they might not want to know how it changes or adapts the ending. But do you have any general thoughts about why what Gerwig did seems to be pleasing even people who are very big fans of the book?
I do have thoughts. You know, the ambiguity of the ending is kind of a Rorschach test, because the people who want one particular ending can see that, and those who might want a different one can see that. But both are faithful to the spirit of the original novel and also to the way the novel is very autobiographical. I mean, it's not strictly autobiographical, but Alcott was writing about her life. And this is another thing that the film does masterfully, is it's pretty faithful to the book, but it also weaves in passages and text from Alcott's life and from her other writings and letters and her life experiences in a truthful way, which illuminates really what she was doing with the novel in the first place. Was she was writing what she knew, writing about her experiences, even though it's not a complete and exact parallel. And so I think the ending of the film just marvelously illuminates these things about Alcott's life, about the times, and is true to the novel. And both endings can be, and I think are, simultaneously true.
I think that's the perfect word, illuminates. And you can probably apply that to any good adaptation of a literary work that does make some changes, is not to worry so much about the word for word, letter for letter fidelity to the text, but does it illuminate something central to the original text in a different way? And yeah, I think that's what Gerwig does really well here with a couple of different areas, not only the ending, but the characters of Amy, the younger sister, who was illuminated for me, especially with Florence Pugh's wonderful Oscar-nominated performance. That character was illuminated for me in a different way than she had been in the book. Anytime I had read it, I don't think she changes Amy's character. I think she just, again, brings to light some of those things that maybe I just missed as a reader, but was always there. So yeah, that's a helpful way to think about adaptations in general, I think. So I mentioned Amy and mentioned Joe earlier. I want to leave, Karen, with probably a bad question, a dangerous question, because when we talked about this with my family, my wife and my two daughters after watching the movie, which March sister are you, would you identify as? You know, things got a little testy because people don't like to be told what their personality is and who they fit. But still, I think it can be fun. So I am going to ask you, and I'm going to allow you to say you're a combo maybe of one or two of these. I think I ended up going like, I'm a little Meg, I'm a little Joe, because it didn't match up for me perfectly. So are you Meg? Are you Joe? Are you Beth? Are you Amy? Or are you a mix of those?
That's a good question. I think I'm actually what you said, a mixture of Meg and of Joe. I definitely have that sort of, even though I'm the youngest in my family, I think I definitely have some personality traits of the eldest sister and kind of that school mermish personality. but I don't think I'm like the belle of the ball or anything. So in that respect, I can be a little bit feisty and of course want to write, and I do have a career. So in that respect, I think I'm like Joe.
Yeah. That sounds right. That would have been no argument for me. I would have pegged you there too. So thanks for playing along.
You have to play that game when you talk about Little Women, I think.
You kind of have to, exactly. Well, Karen, thank you so much for giving us some time. Is there anything else you wanted to mention about either the book or the movie before we let you go?
I would just, again, encourage people who haven't read the book in a long time or even haven't seen the movie to do both and to not worry about spoilers or the order in which you do one or the other, but just to enjoy the story in all of its adaptations and the original as well, because it definitely is worth a revisit, and certainly share it with all the young men and women in your life, because it is timeless, as your daughter has shown. And it's very, very contemporary, as old as it is. That's the remarkable thing about it.
Definitely. Well, good advice, Karen. Thank you again. Really fun talking to you for the podcast.
Thanks so much, Josh.
Down on Bowery, they lose their ball eyes and their lip mouths in the night. And stumbling through the street, they say, sir, do you got a light? And if you do, then you're my friend. And if you don't, then you're my foe. And if you are a deity of any sort, then please don't go.
That was a little bit of Regina Spektor's Don't Leave Me from her 2012 album From the Cheap Seats, and it's just one of the tracks from this episode's specially curated Spotify playlist that features 30 amazing sisters making the world a much more beautiful place with their music. Soul, country, pop, gospel, rock, women have been a critical part of the musical conversation going on around the world since day one, and this mix just barely scratches the surface. Hi, I'm John J. Thompson, Think Christian's resident DJ, and I don't know about you, but I can't imagine contemporary music without the grace, grit, wisdom, and heart that women bring to not just music, but art in general. That we have to even stop and consider a theological reflection on the value that our sisters bring is a tragedy in and of itself, but fortunately we have art to move our spirits into places our minds may sometimes not yet be ready to go. Thank God these saints, well, I guess they're not all saints, haven't given up on us just yet. In this mix, you'll hear from one of the most diverse mix of styles yet. Pioneers like Sister Rosetta Tharpe and Dolly Parton, and brand new faces like Madison Cunningham and Liz Weiss. There are songs that directly deal with issues related to equality and respect, thanks Aretha, and songs that glance up against the more subtle aspects of conversations like these. And I hope it doesn't come off as mansplaining for me to once again describe how this works, but all you have to do is search for the Think Christian profile on Spotify and follow us. Then, if you follow the latest episode playlist, the newest batch of songs will always be there in your browser. We also post to each episode's batch of songs separately, and then there's that massive archive, which has over 500 songs now, so don't forget about that. And you can also find links in the emails you probably get from us. And as always, if you think of any great songs I should add, feel free to tweet at me, at John J. Thompson, and I will take your suggestions under advisement. Who are your favorite female artists? I'd love to hear, but make sure you check the mix first to see if I already included them. Until next time, this is JJT holding the door for you, unless you don't want me to, but, well, I'll forget it.
Thank you, John. Be sure to track down that playlist on Spotify. John does a great job with those compilations. I also want to thank Karen Swallow Pryor. Read her books. I'd encourage you to do that. And also follow her on Twitter at KS Pryor. She described herself as being feisty, and that is a feisty feed, so you don't want to miss it. I'm not as feisty, but I am on Twitter. Larson on Film. And if you want to follow Think Christian, just search for Think Christian. Again, we'd love to get some feedback about the show emailed to tcpodcast@thinkchristian.net. What did you think of Little Women? How do you reread scripture so that you're faithfully re-encountering God's story? Let us know. Again, that email is tcpodcast@thinkchristian.net. Karen was great, but if you missed our regular voices, I've got good news for you. All of them are going to be back on our next episode. So Abby, Catherine, JR, Claude, Eric, Joe, and Sarah, everyone's going to be here to discuss the pop culture items that best captured the spiritual mood of the 2010s. So each of them is going to throw one pick into the ring, and hopefully that will all add up to a portrait of the decade. Look for that in a couple of weeks. In the meantime, if you don't want to miss any of our articles, sign up to receive our emails at thinkchristian.net/subscribe. The Think Christian Podcast is a production of Reframe Media, a family of programs designed to help you see your whole life reframed by God's gospel story. Visit reframemedia.com for more info. Our audio engineer and post-production supervisor is John Reeder. Reframe's co-director overseeing content strategy is Robin Vasselin. Thanks for listening as we discuss how our pop culture fandom resonates with our faith. And lastly, a note of thanks to the Communication Arts Department at Trinity Christian College in Palos Heights, Illinois, which provided the recording space for this episode. You can learn more at trnty.edu and go Trolls.